With November right around the corner, ISU Music Opera Studio is making ready for their upcoming opera presentation on November 1st through the 4th at the Fisher Theater on the ISU campus in Ames. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum for IPR's Iowa Arts Showcase, and we're coming to you from Fisher Theater in Ames. And in to tell us about the ISU Music's Opera Studio production is opera and ISU senior lecturer in voice, music director Jody Goebel, along with director of theater at Iowa State University, director Brad Dell. And we also have joining us the director of orchestra, Thomas Cunningham, who's conducting this ISU production, and he's new to Iowa. Welcome to Iowa State.
Thank you so much.
Also with us, we have the costume designer, Doris Nash, joining us, and she's the costume shop supervisor. And performing in this production, mezzo-soprano Samantha Schmitz, who is a junior this year. Samantha is a vocal music education major, and she sings the role of Public Opinion. I've always wanted to meet Public Opinion, so this is a wonderful opportunity for me. And appearing in the opera ensemble, food sciences major junior Lena Frank. And thank you both for coming today. Let's get started. First, I'd like to get a little background in here. How did you decide to select one of the gems of the operatic world? And tell us about the selection of this piece.
Orpheus in the Underworld is a French operetta, and operetta is one of my great loves, and I had been doing some research into Offenbach, actually. And it's not just that I like the piece that made us pick it, it's completely suitable for our purposes. We had an enormously talented cast, and we didn't want to do a show that only had five principals and didn't give the ensemble very much to do. We wanted to spread the wealth. This show does that. It's a comedy. It's a satire. Those read is very modern. So when we choose any piece of music, we look at the talent that we have. We think about what we can cast. We think about what is appropriate for young singers to sing, which is a relatively limited part of the repertoire. And then we think about what we want to say with the show.
Well, it's great that you have some wonderful singers, but also that you have an orchestra who's able to play this music.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
This is one of Offenbach's most colorful works, and it's a real great fit for our program here as well. If you come, you'll also get to hear Kelly Olson, our incredible concertmaster, who has an extended solo in this as well.
How about you? You have lots of fun things happening. You're going into Greek mythology. How are you setting this, and how is it coming together?
It has been a total hoot. This is a show that begins on Earth, and then we head to the frivolity of Olympus, and then descend into the delicious, hedonistic, Bacchanalian revelry of Hades, which of course climaxes with one of the most famous songs ever written, the Can-Can. And we've just had a real blast in exploring all of the wonderfully fun and delicious ways that all of these characters want to just let loose and get rid of their boredom and have a great time, which is what occurs in the world of Hades. So we've had a blast with that. And in fact, we've really kind of thought of all of the different things in our world and in pop culture that are these hedonistic delights. And so in our world, Hades is kind of a combination of Mardi Gras, Moulin Rouge, the Rocky Horror Show, and drag nightclubs. So it's been a real hoot to put it all together.
So this must be a hoot with costuming as well. Tell us about that, Doris.
Well, as Brad said, we've got the three different worlds, and that's been one of my challenges, is to help portray the differences in those worlds. Earth, we envisioned as Versailles in the days of Marie Antoinette, when she would go out there and play shepherdess and that sort of thing. And then Olympus is, you know, your Greek myth, people in their tunics and togas and that sort of thing. Or not people, I'm sorry, they're gods. All the gods in their Roman costumes. And then, yes, the mashup that is Hades, and with the idea that that's going to be over the top and really very colorful and a lot of fun.
And so did you have to come up with the bolt of lightning, or are you having a bolt of lightning in this?
the ensemble creates the bolt of lightning. So I always like to say, when possible, let's let it be actor action rather than tech. And so anytime we can make it exciting actor action, so the ensemble provides the bolt of lightning that occurs at our climactic moment.
Jody, you said you were looking into this. Give us a little background on this work. And it was quite risque at the time.
Offenbach didn't allow his daughters to attend opening night of Orpheus in the Underworld. It was well received by the public, who wanted that kind of frivolity and escape. But the censors thought it was terrible and sacrilegious and excoriated it in the press. So what you need to know going into doing a revival of this production is what was happening politically in Paris at the time. Napoleon was in charge. He had just very, very, very narrowly escaped being deposed, but he had put down the coup and had responded to that by doubling down on censorship in theater and journalism and the press. Offenbach had produced 30 operettas before Orpheus, and they were all tiny little shows. He didn't work for the National Opera, and he didn't work for Opéra Comique, so he could only have three actors in his productions that sang, and then one other actor that didn't sing, and he was limited to a single act. So all of the shows before Orpheus were very small in scale. They were in a little shoebox of a theater, and they were very, very popular with the Parisian public. So when the Opéra Comique finally hired him and he could expand his vision into a regular two-act operetta, he took political aim, a satirical aim, at everything that he thought was wrong with society and literature and the way that the musical establishment was functioning, and basically everything that represented the establishment in general in Paris at the time. So you get this satire that is... in the past, I've described this as a razor blade wrapped in a marshmallow.
And you were saying that you were able to update this just a bit, too, and make it more current with what's going on right now.
Yes, we are performing this in translation. I think that all comedy works better in the language that the audience speaks, and satire most of all. We didn't have to do very much of this to make it read as modern.
And how about you, Brad? Are there some things that you tweaked in this show as well?
We're not trying to make a specific political statement with it. We're letting the characters speak for themselves, and it definitely mocks those in power and makes those in power look rather buffoonish, silly, obsessed with keeping power, certainly obsessed with public opinion. Obviously, that's one of the big themes of this show, is the effect and power that public opinion holds over not only the humans, but also the gods, and in fact, the gods most of all. And that's been really fun and interesting, and is certainly very topical. And then I think we've just had a blast with playing around with the scandalous nature of that the show kind of brings with its history, and the words that we've been trying to think of is keeping it on the saucy and the body side, but not necessarily the raunchy or the scandalous side. So we've been having a lot of fun kind of playing that line and keeping it fun, bright, silly, spicy, saucy, but not raunchy.
Now, you had said earlier, too, that the audience was going to be surprised by this production. What did you mean by that?
It's a lot. This production is a lot.
Well, I think there's just so much going on, and it's a lot of fun, and it's beautiful music, and then there is a ton of dancing and a lot of physicality and a lot of comedy, and so I think it's... Especially here, doing an opera at a university, we're going to get a lot of people who have never seen opera before. And I think that they probably have a perception of opera as being very stuffy and snooty. And pretty darn quickly, this show takes the gas out of that perception.
So there's a mountain in this. Are you building the mountain, Doris?
No, I'm just clothing the people who walk on the mountain.
How about you, Brad? Are you helping with this mountain scene?
Right. So the show is filled with lots of wonderful metaphor. So the mountain is rather metaphoric as well in our production. But one thing we are exploring really for the first time here, in at least in a while, with at ISU Theater is doing projections. So we're really allowing projections, projections are huge in the theater and the opera world. And that seemed like a really logical way to tell this story, because we have to switch locations so quickly and so often, and moods and feelings. And so we're going to really allow the projections to help us establish the mood and feelings that the scenes and the songs exhibit.
Projections can be so effective. That's fantastic.
And really scary. So we're excited to see how they all turn out.
Well, let's talk to our public opinion and see what she feels about this. Do you have a public opinion about this production?
I am so in love with this production. I think one of the things that excites me the most about it is just right away it breaks that fourth wall between the stage and the audience and really invites the audience to come with us and to let go with us. You know, we have so much fun on stage, and it, you know, normally in shows you watch and you're like, oh, that looks like so much fun. They look like they're having a great time. You get to go with us. You know, we're around you. You are in whatever world we are in at that time. And it's been just such a joy to explore all those worlds, and now to be able to take the audience with us into them is just a great joy.
And you have been the bane of Orpheus. I mean, you are just at his side giving him a hard time.
It's kind of fun to be able to poke at Ian a little bit. Ian is our Orpheus, Ian Butler. He's a tenor. And just to be able to be that character that everyone is afraid of. There's a scene where my name is mentioned and everyone goes into a panic. And so to be able to watch that from the wings is a great joy every night.
And what about your costume? What are you wearing as public opinion?
Well, I haven't seen it quite yet, but my rehearsal skirt has been quite interesting and very large. So my character is rather uptight and stuffy, if you will. So it goes with the earth kind of theme of Marie Antoinette, very elegant. And I believe that what we used in at the very beginning was just a wall with ruffles, which is just, she's a force. She has a soft side, but she's a force. And I think that will be communicated very well in the costuming.
And how about you, Lena? I mean, you're in the chorus, and the chorus has some fun parts as well.
Yeah, so I think the greatest thing about being in the chorus is that we each have our own name, and so we're each our own goddess and god. So that kind of debates on, you know, what we're going to act and how we do. So, like, for example, when Orpheus and Public Opinion come in, you know, we're posing and we're prepared, and so we can choose what kind of stance we're going to be in, and I kind of, you know, choose it to who I am as a goddess. But also it's really interesting that we can, you know, react and play with all of these different parts, and that we can get super excited, you know, to go to hell, and like how we interact with the characters around us. And a lot of the stuff that we get to do in the chorus is kind of planned by us. So it's a lot of collaboration with, you know, we broke into groups and we're like, how are we going to do this? And that's just really fun because it makes it ours, a little bit of, you know, us put into our production. So it's really fun and interesting.
So Samantha, you are a music major, and Lena, you are not a music major. So how does this fit in with all your classwork and your education at ISU?
Well, as a music major, we can take Opera Studio. And so I believe it's every third fall, the Opera Studio does a full production. So it just happened that this was the year. And this was the opera that was chosen. Last was Magic Flute. So it kind of works well into our schedule. We don't really have any classes that run later into it. And our professors are very accommodating. Our voice teachers all know what we're doing as music majors, you know, like how to prepare you for that, because it does take a lot vocally to get through rehearsals, and just to know how to gauge, you know, what you're doing with your lessons and choir and anything else you might be doing outside of just academic work, to be able to come to rehearsal every night and be prepared and to be able to give your best and sing your best every night. We have wonderful faculty here who all really just care about us as people and as performers. And so it's very nice to be able to do a show here.
And how about you, Lena?
It's tough, I'll be honest. I tell a lot of people, you know, I can't come to like this event or I can't come to study tonight because I'm in an opera, and I get some weird looks. But, you know, it's you just have to work through it. You know, it's practice every night, but it's fun. It's something that, you know, I would rather do than some science homework or something, you know, some food chem studying. But, you know, it's just like anything else. You just got to plan your time and kind of just work through it.
And some fabulous memories as you look back on your careers here at Iowa State.
Absolutely. I think working with this cast is probably the best part. It's a lot of fun.
So tell us more about your career here at Iowa State.
Yeah, so I'm a food science major, but I have a performing arts minor. And I get asked a lot about, you know, why do you do performing arts? Why do you stay in it? And specifically, I like directing, but I think being in performing arts not only makes you a more creative person, but it also allows you to be able to collaborate and work very well with other people. And I think that's something that's really important with leadership, and kind of what I do, you know, now that I'm in theater, is when I get into a group with a bunch of people, I can work so much better that I know how to like collaborate and pull ideas, and not just, you know, get these ideas, but be able to kind of string them together and put something that is a part of everyone in the group. It's really interesting. I think that, you know, I think theater should be, you know, mandatory for a lot of people just because it makes me more confident. And I just think being a part of this program, it's supportive. I like to come to this environment because I feel kind of safe, and it's something that I like spending my time doing. So, yeah.
And you were talking about collaboration, Lena, and all of you in the music department and theater department had to collaborate. It's a huge amount of collaboration.
I think one of the things that makes the orchestra so special as well is that the majority of our orchestra here is non-majors. It's folks who are just really passionate about making music and making that a part of their career here. And Iowa State, I think, does a really incredible job of incorporating those folks. We had an incredible number of students in the orchestra want to play in the pit, but many more than we could accommodate due to the size of the pits. So we're doing a rotation where students will get a chance to play several nights, but not all the nights, so everyone gets a chance.
And we are actually, we don't have a music department and a theater department. We are actually the Department of Music and Theater. And so we are thrilled that we get to collaborate all the time as one department. And we collaborate at least once a year on a major musical. Last year we did Oklahoma, in the spring we're doing Godspell. But this is really the kind of, I think, one of our signature collaborative events, this opportunity to pull in the symphony orchestra and opera studio. And so when we advertise this production, we say this is ISU Theater and Opera Studio presenting this production. And we're super proud of that, and super proud of the Department of Music and Theater being such a combined force and collaborative entity.
So, who wants to do a synopsis of Act One?
In Act One, we meet public opinion first, who announces herself and tells us what she's all about, and then addresses basically the audience and says, if you don't watch yourself, I'm coming for you next. And then Eurydice and Orpheus show up, and they're a married couple. Of course, in the original Greek myth, they were a married couple that was very much in love, so much in love that Orpheus goes to hell to get Eurydice back when she dies. But in this version of it, it's a comedy and a satire, and they hate each other, and they're both sleeping with other people, and they find this out in their first duet. And so when Eurydice dies, Orpheus is thrilled. He thinks that Christmas has come early, and it's not until public opinion shows up and says, no, you have to do the right thing or I will ruin you, that he agrees to go and talk to Jupiter. And so then we leave Earth and we go to Olympus, and on Olympus, the gods are bored. They have an incredibly privileged existence. They eat nectar and ambrosia, but they're tired of it, and they want diversion. And so they view the arrival of Orpheus and public opinion as the greatest diversion ever, and welcome the chance to follow Jupiter to Hades to reclaim Eurydice from Pluto.
In this world, there is one true sin, and one true thing that people, that everybody in the world is most fearful of other than public opinion. And that one really super negative thing is boredom. That we see all of that, it's the worst of evils. And that's why everybody, especially all of the gods, are so excited to head to Hades, because they know there it's not boring and they get to have fun and have a good time. And we see the gods when they're returning from their trips down to Earth, that the reason that they head to Earth is to entertain themselves and they mess with the Earthlings in order to entertain themselves so that they are not racked with boredom. And I think that there's something so innately human about that, that it's so, so very appealing.
And it sort of goes without saying that this is the most pointy point of the satire that that Offenbach was making, is that this is what was happening in Paris at the time.
Who wants to do the honors with Act Two?
So Act Two begins, and we haven't seen Eurydice for a while, and there she is, and she appears, and she is really, really bored because Pluto's off in Olympus and he hasn't been there, and so she's just actually kind of mourning, where is Pluto? Why am I here if I'm not going to be entertained by Pluto? And then Jupiter and Pluto appear, and Jupiter is looking for Eurydice because he has the hots for anything that's hot. And then Cupid shows up, and in order to seduce Eurydice, she transforms Jupiter into a fly. And there is this wonderfully famous, insanely ridiculous duet between Eurydice and Jupiter as a fly, where he seduces her. And that is one of the most interesting, shocking, and hilarious songs or scenes that I've ever had the pleasure of staging. And then finally, all of the gods and goddesses appear decked out in their fabulous Mardi Gras Moulin Rouge drag, and they sing a hymn to Bacchus until finally Orpheus and public opinion arrive, and Jupiter gives the command of how Eurydice can leave Hades. And of course, he throws a giant lightning bolt, stops it all, and Eurydice ends up deciding to be a Bacchante wine girl. And we all sing the can-can till the day is done.
And dance the can-can as well?
Oh, yes. I described this in another publicity event, that what we wanted to do and what we are doing is that the can-can just explodes all over the theater.
Well, that sounds very exciting right there. So how many folks are on stage during this? How many parts are there that are cast?
There's 25 students who are in the ensemble, and then the orchestra, there are 32. And then we have a backstage crew of about 12 to 15. So there's nearly 70 students involved in this production every night. I think it's just such a marvelously collaborative educational event for Iowa State University, not just for the Department of Music and Theater.
I think it's exciting. Is it performed a lot?
Well, it's very interesting that you should ask that. Orpheus in the Underworld gets done relatively frequently in universities and small companies even, but usually on a very shoestring budget. They're in modern dress or they're all in black. It's done with piano. It's not done very often with orchestra. In fact, we encountered some little hiccups when we went to rent the orchestra parts that I won't bore you with. But what you don't see very often is this show done in a theater with an orchestra, with full lights and costumes and the whole ball of wax and a really, really lavish, beautiful production. And that's what we've got going on.
And it's a shame that more folks don't do it in that way, because it provides for such a feast of opportunities for both the music and the characterization, and the orchestra is wonderful, but the opportunity to create these worlds and these costumes and all of this fabulous spectacle is pretty rich within the material.
So Doris, is there anything you'd like to add to this?
Well, it's pushed me, which is a good thing because, you know, we don't like boredom either. but yes, trying to find some sort of a look or a costume that suits a character and that they'll be able to dance in because they've got to be able to do the can-can and that is extravagant and over the top and helps to further this story about the good time, the party that all the gods are looking forward to so much in Hades. So, yeah.
How can folks get more information and tickets?
So the show runs November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at 7:30 p.m. and November 4th at 2 o'clock p.m. And tickets are available through the Iowa State Center ticket office or any Ticketmaster outlet. Or you can also come to the Fisher Theater box office prior to the performance. We anticipate that the show is going to sell really, really well. So we hope that folks will get their tickets way ahead of time.
Iowa Public Radio thanks goes to Chris Fenton and Alexis Hahn, and a big thanks to Iowa State University's Orpheus in the Underworld music director Jody Goebel, along with director Brad Dell, and also the director of the orchestra Thomas Cunningham and the costume designer Doris Nash, along with a couple of performers from the show, mezzo-soprano Samantha Schmitz, who's a junior and is singing the part of Public Opinion, and also Lena Frank, who is a food science major, a junior, and is appearing in the opera ensemble. And a big thanks to them. It's been a pleasure to hear about this opera, and we want to encourage everyone to go to this presentation if they can. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.